Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, crossing to the other side. Stephen Williams has always been sensitive to spirits, initially having an out-of-body experience as a child and eventually becoming a paranormal investigator as an adult. Stephen's journey into the paranormal has been a compelling one. Today, we hear many stories of Stephen and his team's investigations and spirit rescues, where he helps the dead cross over to the other side. How much do the dead need the living to counsel them on their current state of existence? Today, we discuss all of this and more with Stephen Williams on The Grave Talks.
I always was interested in it, even, you know, as a young child. I saw a lot of movies, a lot of television programs, and I remember one movie in particular really got my attention. It was The Haunting, the original Haunting. I think it was released in 1963. Julie Harris is in that movie. And there's a couple of scenes in there that were pretty terrifying to me. But I was always interested in it. I had a very strange out-of-body experience when I was a teenager that really terrified me. And I think I shut down and kind of shied away from it for a while. Mm-hmm. And it was much, much later that I really became involved. So it happened around 2002. That was decades later. And I was in St. Augustine, Florida, went on a ghost tour and took some pictures. I came back to Memphis, found a little group here, and sent those pictures to them. They debunked them, but I was interested. I kept sending pictures and recordings and things to them. They eventually asked me to join, and that's just how I got started. And that group lasted for a while, fizzled away, and we added some different people. And so I've been involved about 18 years.
Okay. When you went in and dived into this again as an adult, many years after you had that experience as a child, did you kind of have to personally, mentally revisit some of that, some of those moments to try and make some sense of what was going on at that point in time in your childhood?
I think so. I mean, it was something I was really interested in from an early age, but it was also a little scary to me.
Sure.
And I did have I'm clairsentient, so I can feel the energy of spirits. It's kind of a tingling sensation I feel in different areas around my crown chakra. And I think I probably had those types of sensory perceptions during all those years, but I didn't know what to make out of it. Mm-hmm. And then by working with mediums like Kayla, my partner Kayla and Jennifer, I've learned what that is and how to interpret it correctly. And so, yeah, just always had the interest, and then it just became available to me to become part of a team and to get in, actually do a lot of residential investigations and a lot of the well-known allegedly haunted sites in the Memphis and Mid-South area. So I've had a lot of experiences and seen a lot of things. And
When Stephen, when you got into paranormal investigating and you kind of crossed into that world and you joined a team and all that, and obviously the interest is there, the passion is there, there's a lot of questions there. Was there any goal there at the beginning? What was your thought process when you began going into the world of paranormal investigation? Was it just to see if you could find evidence, prove that it's there to others? Was it to a self-affirming, trying to prove it to yourself? Or was there a greater goal in mind initially when you started investigating on a more serious level?
Yeah, I would say my primary goal in the beginning was just to find some kind of tangible proof that there is an afterlife. And I was extremely skeptical the first year. I mean, we would go into homes, stereos would turn on and off, there'd be all kinds of messages and music. that would play. Physical things would happen. We used to put down trigger objects. Remember one house we did that in, they had used a Ouija board. And when I put the trigger object down, it was a coin, a Sacagawea dollar coin. And when I just went out of the room, when I came back, it was gone. Mm-hmm. And I looked around the room, it was across the room, and when I went over and picked it up, it was like super hot. So it had they had dematerialized it and then moved it across the room and placed it in another position. So things like that happened, and you know, I still kept thinking, well, I don't know, maybe somebody moved it, who knows. And then finally, about 2 or 3 years into the investigation work, we were in a theater north of Memphis in a place called the Ruffin Theater, which is used for plays now. It was originally a skating rink that burned down around the turn of the century, and then they built a movie theater back in the 1910, 1920s. And it's used for plays now, and we'd heard about a little girl that people had seen there for years and years. She's always appears in Victorian clothing. And so we did some investigation work there, captured some EVPs, and then one night she actually spoke out loud when we were playing some music from her time period. And that, after that, was like, okay, there's this is real. You know, there's no way to explain this any other way, because we all heard the voice, and I can actually point to the seat that the voice came from if I went back into that theater. So after that, it's become really normal for me. I mean, I realize there's a spirit world around us, and we have a lot of interaction. Sometimes we'll be going to an investigation and we will have someone get in the car with us. We'd had that happen on the way on the interstate one time, going way over to East Tennessee to help a family over there. We had a gentleman get in the car with us. So it's kind of really normal for me now.
When you say you had like a gentleman get in the car with you or things like mm-hmm. that happen, how clear are these events to other individuals, or are these events where you're picking up on a gentleman getting in the car with you? Is this something where you have to have the ability as you guys do, where you can sense these things, you can pick up on these things, and others may not have that strong of an ability? How clear as day, if you will, is it to others when something like that happens?
I think a lot of people are just not aware of it. They can't read energy like we can.
Okay.
I know Kayla was, we were all traveling together. Kayla and Jennifer and I were going to see this family, and Kayla was taking a nap in the back seat. And when I felt this person get in the car with us, and sometimes I'm the first one that notices the energy, and then I will ask them if they feel anybody or see anyone, because they're more clairvoyant, more clairaudient than I am. It looked like a flak jacket. Mm-hmm. And he was apparently searching for his mother. So we connected him with his mother, and he was able to transition, release. But most people, they can sometimes feel the energy. They feel like heat or pressure or just a kind of a knowing that someone's there watching, but they're not able to really read the energy as clearly as we are and actually see who's there, in a sense.
Can you do the best you can to describe to me what that is like, where you're reading the energy? Because that's always been a very interesting concept for me. I myself am not sensitive in any way to that level. So I'm curious as to how that process works. Is it literally as if you're getting words and messages and you're hearing them and then repeating them? Or is it more of a... I like to interpret it sometimes as a download, almost like the data is just there and suddenly you have mm-hmm. the information and you're literally reading it off as a computer would read it off because the information has just come to you. How would you describe it yourself?
I think for Kayla and Jennifer, that's kind of the way they do it. For me, it started when I was sitting in the slave quarters of an antebellum home in a small town east of Memphis, and this was about 2005. So I started feeling this tingling, almost like somebody had dropped some ants onto my head, and they were kind of marching around in my head. But what I've learned by working with mediums over the years is if I feel on my right side, it's always masculine. If I feel on the left side, it's feminine. The lower I feel it, it's a sensory thing of vibration or frequency. So if I feel that tingling sensation lower, that tells me that the spirit that we've encountered is what we would term earthbound. They have not made a transition to a higher awareness, a higher vibration. And then if I feel it higher, it's someone who, like maybe a crossed over relative or loved one of that person who's come to maybe deliver a message. And then I can feel even higher vibrational energies too, like master energies, angelic type energies, that type of thing, guides. So it's almost like they've mapped out my crown chakra area. And by working with mediums, I can tell those things. But I'm also clairvoyant, clairaudient, those are not my strong suits. And sometimes I can walk into a place and just see, in my mind's eye, see exactly who's there. Mm-hmm. It's not as often as Kayla and Jennifer, they could just walk into a place immediately and connect and see and hear the thoughts of those spirit people who are there.
Give me a sense as to when you got into the investigating and you started having these experiences and really getting into the area of being able to identify who these people are, these energies are, the ones that were earthbound ones that are still in areas where we're just talking of mm-hmm. walking into right. a location and there's multiple people there or even just one right. person there. How was it where you were able to get to the level of being able to identify them down to male, female, and maybe even more information about who that individual was and why they're there?
Yeah, so I've been blessed to work with about a dozen mediums over the past 18 years, because we actually, the team that I joined, we had a developing medium named Michelle on that team. So she would get some information a lot of times when we went into different locations. She was not fully developed, so she was still working on opening up and expanding her gifts. But once I started feeling that sensation around my crown chakra, that group kind of fell apart around that time. And then there was a couple of people that stayed, and one was a guy named Rich. And Rich he's very sensitive and is able to read the energy. And he and I worked together quite often. And I would feel something. I'd say, hey, do you see anybody here? And he said, yeah, there's a guy standing over there. So again, by working with him with different mediums through the years, if I feel that and I know that there's someone there, I could ask them to validate what I'm feeling. So the validation's super important, especially for someone who's new into this and they're starting to experience spirit energy and to be in it a lot and to start getting some information. So it's very important. And that's what's great about our group is there's three of us who are mediums. Again, Jennifer and Kayla, their strong suits are clairaudience, which is clear hearing, and clairvoyance, which is clear seeing. Mine is clairsentience, which is clear sensing, and also claircognizance, which is clear knowing. I mean, I had a guy call me from, and some of this work we do remotely, so I had a guy call me from California about a week ago, and he was having some disturbances. So I got the voicemail, I called him back, and I could tell just by speaking to him over the phone that there was a female energy in his home and a male energy, just by reading that energy. And so I told him I'd try to get my partners involved, we'd try to get some more information. Well, later on that night, that female came to me, and I got a really clear picture of what she looked like, her age, what she was wearing, even got a name for her. And I called him back the next day and told him that, and he said, that's exactly who we've seen in the house. So sometimes you can read the energy remotely through a photo or through a phone call or, just different ways like that, because everything is connected. It's like there's an energetic web. In my experience, that's the way it works. So me talking to you, if you had someone in your home, I might be able to pick up on who's there, that type of thing.
Why is it that she came to you that night, other than just to identify herself? Was there a message? Was it just to kind of prove to you who she was? What is the purpose there?
She was asking for help in transitioning, so I actually helped her cross over, and she's no longer stuck there in that house. So a lot of times what I've found over the years is when we get a call from a client, it's the spirits are creating such disturbances in the house that the people that live there can't ignore them anymore. Mm-hmm. So they get on the internet and they start looking around. Is there anybody that in our area that can come in and investigate and tell me what's going on and maybe help us, you know, find some peace? So it's almost like when they start looking around, of course, the spirits in the homes are aware of what they're doing and they'll amp it up a little bit. I'll have clients, once they contact us, they say, well, it's getting worse. I said, what do you mean? And they'll say, well, they're doing more. They're knocking more. I said, yeah, they know that we're coming and they know they're going to have a voice and they know that they're going to have some help possibly. So they get excited about it. They really do.
When we're talking about helping them cross over, is it your belief that every spirit that's out there, that was once a living soul on this earth that is now in a home, in a location, wherever they may be, are they all seeking to cross over? Is that the goal? Or give me some insight there on your beliefs there.
Yeah, not all are. I mean, some are very happy where they are. Some are with relatives, and maybe the relatives are grieving them, and they don't feel like they can let go at that time. And they just want to kind of be around their family members. And it's not our job to move any spirit on. It's our job to go in and do some counseling and explain to them that they don't have to be there if they don't want to, that there's more beyond this particular existence that we've had here, that they can transition, release and transition and move up into a higher vibration where they become more aware and they have more opportunities to grow spiritually. And I use the term crossing over because people are kind of familiar with that, but it's really not a physical thing that happens or anything like that. It's more like a vibrational increase in vibration and awareness. So my perspective on what people would call heaven or the next step or whatever is that everything is kind of dimensional, it's overlapping, and it's just that their awareness increases. So it's almost like we kind of lift a fog away from them to where they're able to release their ties to their experiences here. They carry those memories and experiences with them. To use, I think, as learning tools to advance, but they're not mired in this experience, and they can actually let go.
What's always been interesting to me about this idea of helping spirits cross over is the fact that it is the living that are seeming to be the ones in control or the gatekeepers somewhat of helping someone who is deceased move on to another level. Naturally, it would seem to me that if that spirit is on the other side, they're experiencing something we obviously have not experienced yet because we're not there. So in my mind, and I guess probably to a lot of people's minds, you would think, well, they would be more in tune and more in touch with what the options are and where they can go and what they can do and what they can't do. How is it or why is it that there needs to be living or interaction from the living to help the dead make a realization of what is on the side that only they can really see other than what we can see on this side?
Yeah, in my experience in speaking with spirits through mediums and so forth, what they describe is when their passing occurs, typically there are loved ones who are, you know, have already made the transition who come. And there's kind of a bright light type thing. And many times they just they choose not to go with those people for different reasons. Sometimes they're afraid of, you know, things, punishment for things they've done in their lifetime and different reasons, or someone's really grieving them here. So they just kind of become lost in a sense, and they kind of are in a gray area. And then they lose sight of those people who have come because there's a vibrational difference. So our job is to go in and do some counseling with them, or we feel like our mission, our goal is to go in and try to find out why they didn't go, or why they didn't transition and release at the time when they had an opportunity. And then we're kind of like a bridge, a vibrational bridge. So we direct their attention and their awareness there's almost always those people are still around them. They just are, they've lost sight of them, and they can't feel their presence anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost takes a human agent. It does take a human agent to direct their attention. And we do have allies in the spirit world that work with us that provide healing energies when that's needed, and help us to increase the awareness of the spirits we're working with. But those allies in the spirit world do not violate free will. They're available to assist, and they always will come when they're called and will help. But it's like there's universal law that prevents them from just, because it used to bother me. I'd go into a place and there would be a child spirit. And I was thinking, why in the world why is this child here stuck here?
Mm-hmm.
The children have free will too. They're little people, right? So they can make choices, and sometimes they're happy where they are. But in my experience, there's always a guardian with them. There's always a family member or someone who's been appointed to watch over that child spirit. And again, it's just our job to point them towards that person and make them aware that they're there. And many times they recognize them and they just go ahead and release and go on their merry way.
It's an interesting thing. There's two things I want to talk about here.
Sure.
with the child spirit, and I have a question about that, and just kind of a way that I try and understand it. I've had experiences where you have a dream, and I don't know if other people dream this way because I'm not other people, but I have dreams sometimes where I'm in a completely alternative reality, if you will. It'll be a different house. It'll be different people around me. It'll be a whole different life. And in that dream, these people seem completely normal to me. I don't feel out of place. I don't feel that I don't know these people. I don't feel that I don't live in this setting that I'm in this dream. It's just like, that is life. That is how it is. What my current reality is or has been for a long period of time, it's not even registering in my brain as even being there. It's just like wiped. And I'll just be operating on this whole other MO as if this has been my life and this is what it is and this is how I go about my day. And then I'll wake up from a dream like that and go, what the hell was that? Like, how did I not have any, you know, recollection of having a daughter or having the life I live now or where I live or who I'm? It's just like in that dream, in those states sometimes, it's just like it's not there. And I guess that, right, that would be how I try to understand the spirit world of the complexities of it, of being on the other side, and the sometimes I think simplistic look that we have on it going, well, why don't you just cross over? Why don't you just see that light or whatever you want to call it? Is it
right?
Does it something like that where it's almost like it's just blinded out, and for some reason they're not picking up on some of the obvious things that are truly there to them? And that's where the human interaction comes in, where somebody points these things out and suddenly the mind on the other side is hitting this point of going, oh, they're making the realization, you're right, I could do this, I could do that, I didn't even realize that was an option or that it existed until someone just gives that subtle reminder. Is that kind of how that works?
Yes, in my experience, that's exactly how it works.
Okay.
And I can think of two examples right off the bat. We went into a house in Midtown Memphis, and there were several spirits in the house. But we got down to the basement, and there was a lady down there from like 1920s, 1930s, and she was in her mind. She was down there taking care of her chores. She was doing the laundry, and that was kind of her place where she was in charge, and nobody really could come down there and bother her. So she was perfectly happy there. And I think she had just kind of pretty much forgotten everything else. That was her world, in a sense, mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And so she really didn't like me being down there because she had some experiences with men in her lifetime that weren't pleasant. And so she really wouldn't talk to me, but she talked to Kayla and Jennifer. And, you know, they explained to her that she didn't have to be there and do that anymore. You know, there was other things available to her. She wanted to leave there and continue her journey, so to speak. And then talk to her about how times have changed and, you know, women can vote and that kind of thing. That just really shocked her. And then another house we went into, there was a young girl that was hiding in the closet. And all she would say to us is, the house is on fire, the house is on fire. So in her mind, her house had caught on fire, and she'd gotten in the closet to hide. And I expect she died there of smoke inhalation or whatever. But it was hard. It was real difficult breaking through to her. But we're all energy workers and energy channelers, so we're able to actually project energy, vibrational energy to spirits, and that also helps them break out of that mental fog that they're in sometimes. But yeah, that description of what you were talking about is pretty much kind of describes their world is kind of small, and sometimes they get stuck in these mental loops, and it's kind of like just over and over, they're having that last experience of their life, or that's all they can really remember.
Are they realizing the loop itself? I mean, that just to me, it seems that would be torturous.
It would be reliving
this torturous loop of you're stuck in the closet as the house is burning, or you're sitting there doing laundry in your basement over and over. But again, you gotta have to take a look at the mental state of where that individual or that spirit is. Is it like Groundhog's Day for them, where it's never ending, or is there no concept of the time, where they may be sitting in that closet for literally the last 40 years, but to them, it just feels like the same 5 minutes are replaying, and it resets itself every 5 minutes, and it's just as refreshing as the first time. They're not realizing the duration as to which they're doing these tasks.
You know, I've never really asked a spirit that. That's a good question. I'll try to remember to get that information next time we go and work with someone, but the girl that was in the closet, I mean, that was really tragic. Mm-hmm. And it was obvious that she was just reliving that moment over and over and over. So that had probably been a long time experience for her. And that was really sad. But once we were able to break through and actually have a conversation with her and call for one of her loved ones, she was, you know, her vibration just went through the roof. So she was really mired. She was stuck in that.
Yeah. When you had reached out to me a couple weeks back, you had mentioned about a house in Tennessee where you encountered Lily, an active earthbound child spirit. And the really just stunning experiences that you had with that. Why don't you take us into that story and start at the very beginning? How did you get involved, and walk us through what happened in that case?
Okay, so this is a house we were contacted. I've been in the owner of this house. I've been in that would be his stepdaughter's house, and done some work in her house. And she had mentioned that she had lived in this gentleman's house when she was growing up, and that they would hear someone walk up and down the stairs and everything. So I said, well, you know, tell him if he ever wants someone to come and check it out, you know, we'll be glad to do that. So finally he did contact us, and they only lived, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes from each other. So it was not that difficult to go to both houses on a weekend. So we went to his house, and there were a lot of spirits in the house. The little girl was there. We connected with her. There was a gentleman who was an older man that had lived on the property. He talked about that, about the house he lived in, and there were several other spirits, a little boy in the house. But that little girl is pretty amazing. He told us a story because he'd lived in the house for quite a long while. And his close friends were aware of the paranormal activity that was taking place there, and they would want to come over. And so he would have people there, and the spirits would do different things and, you know, prove that they were actually there. But one time he was alone in the house, and he got a phone call. And I believe it looked like his phone was calling him. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, he got a phone call. He answered it, and there was a child's voice, and he said, who is this? And she said, it was a girl's voice. She said, well, we're the children who live in your house. And his first thought was, okay, my friends are pranking me. So he decided he was going to go into an interior closet. This was at night, and he went into this closet, perfectly dark in there, and he held up three fingers, and he said, well, what am I doing right now? And she said, you're holding up three fingers. And so she was definitely there, and she could see what he was doing. And they had also seen evidence of her presence, because one time someone had taken a shower, and they went back into the bathroom, and there was child-sized handprints on the steamed-up window. So we connected with her while we were there during our investigation, and she was kind of elusive. She would kind of run around and not really come very close to us. But as we were leaving, we were all sitting in the living room, and we were talking, and out of midair, a penny dropped right on Kayla's lap, and that was her. She had done that. So we ran out of time that night, because it was quite a drive from Memphis, and there were so many spirits in the house. We had to go back a second time, and we did finally get her to cross over, or to transition and ascend. But it was kind of difficult on the homeowner, because he had developed a relationship with her in a sense. I mean, she felt like a family member, and it was kind of like he was losing that connection. But I explained to him, and I always do this when someone gets attached to a spirit in their home like that, and they feel like they don't want them to leave. I always use the example, you know, if you were to look out your window and see a little girl wandering down the road, and she was definitely lost, when you want to try to help her find her parents, you know, mm-hmm. get back home. And once he thought about that, why, he was okay with her leaving. So she's left some gifts for him. She's actually left some pennies on his pillow.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Stephen Williams from the Memphis Ghost Investigations and Spirit Rescue. Find out more about them at memphisghostinvestigations.com. In part two of our conversation, how did the homeowner where Lily lived communicate with the spirit through a cell phone? Does Stephen think that spirits are using technology to communicate more now that we have so much of it in our lives? Do spirits age after death? How do spirits conjure up the energy to at times influence our physical environment, such as putting handprints on a fogged mirror? And if spirits come to visit us after death and after crossing over, where are they coming back from? Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Brisky. Thanks for listening.